We're in the week of the Most Blessed Trinity. On Sunday, we had this venture into heaven, this glimpse of the inner life of God, this world of perfect unity, of intense love, of communion, of glory, of joy. That's God's life. It's always been God's life. And it's good to get a glimpse of it because he wants to share it with us. But most of the time, that's not what we experience, and sometimes we even forget that that's the basis of reality. When we think of it, we say, well, my goodness, why would God want to mess that up? Why, if he has a perfect, glorious, joyful, loving communion, why do anything else? Why not just enjoy it? Why create anything? Especially free creatures who can sin. But, and that's probably how we would think, or maybe that's how I would think, because we think when we have it good, we keep it. We don't want to lose it. That's exactly what God doesn't do, because that's exactly that's how love doesn't work. See, if we understand love, if we think about it a little bit, if you understand love, we know that love is not about keeping for ourselves all the good we have. Love is about making others joyful. And it makes us more joyful to share with others what we have. That's how God works. Why did he create anything? Well, of course, we're always stepping on a little bit of uncertainty when we're talking about why God does things. We don't know exactly why he does anything. But we know that it's always for love, because everything he does flows from love. So his creation has to be because of love. It has to be the fruit of love. The motive has to be love. So that's why anything is, because of the love of God. Now, I mentioned that lofty, perfect, joyful, loving communion first, because today's readings bring us back down into the messy situation of a fallen world. Today's first reading, it gives us the marriage problems of Tobit and Anna, a little squabble they get into, and then the gospel takes us to the question of paying taxes. Can't get anything more earthy than the requirement of paying taxes. So it seems to us like these two readings have nothing to do with perfect loving communion, but that's where we're wrong. See, God has entered into this seemingly imperfect, not loving mess of a world, and he makes himself present in it. Now let's look at these readings. The first reading, Tobit, we know from yesterday that Tobit was a good man, basically a good man, charitable, but he was also self-righteous. He didn't know it, but he was quite proud of his goodness. And so the Lord, because he loves Tobit, is going to humble him so that he can recognize the even greater goodness of God and be more dependent on God. So this is what happens, and it's a pretty humiliating situation. I mean, it's nothing like having bird droppings fall on your eyes. This is, you know, you're not thinking about, it's not the kind of detail that makes you think about the Trinity, bird droppings falling in his eyes, eventually blinding him. So he goes from being a very influential, good, rich man to being a dependent, poor, blind man. And that really grates on him. And you can see how it builds up in him. He's so... Now, it comes out as a nasty remark to his wife. But anyone who knows marriage knows that nasty remarks don't necessarily come from the issue of the moment. You married people all know this. I mean, the things people fight about are usually not what's really bothering them. Those are just trigger things. Very minor differences blow up into huge arguments. Well, here's Tobit, and maybe it's easy to see that men are much more have much greater difficulty being dependent than women do in general. And Tobit is not used to having to have people take care of him. Like, he's blind. And He's used to taking care of others, and that's a lot easier to take care of other people than to allow yourself to be cared for. Because it's humbling to be cared for. And you could see he's tired of being the object of people's charity. So when his wife comes along and says, well, someone gave me this goat as a bonus, he's just fed up. Like, I don't want people giving us stuff. Just don't even talk like that. You can imagine his reaction. It's maybe not as obvious from the text, but if you just think about it, you know exactly what he's going through. He's humiliated, and he doesn't like it. The only one he can express it to is his wife. This is the greatness of marriage and also the difficulty of marriage, that you have a partner with whom you can be real, with whom you can be yourself, you can be vulnerable, but then you also end up hurting the very person that you're committed to for life. And your spouse hurts you too. That's happened. So he blasts her for stealing a goat when he knows it's not true. I mean, she's no thief. It's just his irrational overflow from his frustrations and his humiliation. And then she snaps back at him and says, "Oh, now you're Mr. Do Good. You're the good guy. This now we see what you're really like." What does she say? "See, your true character is finally showing itself." Oh, sharp. It's true, but it's a very sharp way of saying it, and she probably shouldn't have said it like that. And yet, I say, this is the greatness of marriage, that people can be honest with each other in a way that's almost impossible in any other relationship, because other relationships break down if you get too close or get too honest. But marriage, because it's permanent, if it's a good marriage, when people are committed to it, you can speak the truth to each other without the risk of breaking down the relationship. And that's what makes it possible to grow. So there's something beautiful here, and I'm saying it this way because what marriage squabbles look like is, you know, a mess, a sin, hurt, anger, and all that. But we forget God is in the middle of this. God has entered into the middle of this, and God is at work in the life of Tobit here. The perfect Holy Trinity is at work in the life of Tobit, humbling him, purifying him. And he's even using his wife. Now, his wife is working hard to take care of her husband. So you can see why she's fed up. I mean, she does everything she can possibly do for this guy, and now he's accusing her of being a thief. So you can see why she reacted. But that's human nature on display. That's why Tobit is a very great book to ponder, and this reading is a great reading to ponder. It's human nature on display, but it's not, and it's not clear what God is doing yet. It's certainly not clear to Tobit and Anna, but it can be clear to us because we're pondering it as the Word of God, and we're saying, okay, here in this tense, difficult, humiliating, embarrassing situation, God is at work. Good lesson. Good lesson. God is at work. Especially almost everybody here is married, so God is at work. God is at work. You might not be able to see it in the moment, but don't forget. Okay. Well, God is also at work in the gospel, and here's another case where you would wonder why God would bother to get into this. I mean, here you've got Pharisees and Herodians. You've got the far right and the far left. They're in collaboration. They're attacking Jesus. This is Holy Week. They have already determined that they want to put him to death. They'll do pretty much anything they can to get him. And they bring up this issue of taxes. Taxes. Taxes, government. Government, corruption. Corruption, power struggles, infighting, injustices, and the whole mess. It's not unique to the Philippines in 2023. This is how governments work. This is how this is human nature at work. So they start with a bit of flattery. Oh, we know you're such a truthful man, and we know that you are really going to speak the truth to us. So tell us the truth about this one. Should we pay the tax to Caesar or should we not pay? You can see here, if you think about it, just one more of the tactics of the world. Whenever people in power want to attack, They use the same, they see the same tactics all the time in ancient world or now in social media. First of all, they try to make people look bad. So they say he's incompetent, he's weak, he's old, he's whatever. Now, you can't do that with Jesus because he doesn't look bad. He's brilliant and powerful, so they can't make him look incompetent. So then they try, and this is how tyrants always work, they try usually one of three things, and either something to do with money, something to do with a violation of the law, scandal of some kind of, you know, in the church it'd be heresy or something like that. But in the government, it's like some violating national security or something like that. And then the other option is always sexual scandals. You know, take a picture of somebody with a prostitute or something like that. So they can't get Jesus in a sexual scandal. They don't even try it. But they do try to catch him breaking the law and now, in this case, violating the taxes or saying something that will show that he's against taxes. Now, accusing people of not paying taxes is one of the most common accusations because tax laws have gotten so complicated. I don't know exactly here in the Philippines, but it's very hard to know if you've paid your taxes or not because there's so many laws and you might try and still not pay them all. So, should we pay the tax? I'm just pointing this out as a kind of typical attack of power. I tried to put someone down, and that's all they're trying to do to Jesus is trip him up and snare him in his speech. Jesus sees right through it all. He's not afraid to get into the fray. You see, this is why it's good to start with the Trinity. Why does God want to mess with taxes? Why put your foot in that dunghill? You know, why sully yourself with the corruption of the ways of the world? Well, because of love. You see, God has very deliberately gotten himself right into the middle of the sin condition. He's dealing with drunkards, he's dealing with prostitutes, he's dealing with corrupt officials, he's dealing with self-righteous religious people, he's dealing with people who are unfaithful to their vows, liars, flatterers, and he's also dealing with humble, good people. So, but it's a big mess. So, entering into the mess, that's one thing he does, but he does it in such a way that he himself is not stained by it. He opens a way for holiness to reign. And this is a brilliant response he gives to the question about taxes. He says, "Show me a coin." Implying he doesn't have any money. He can't be accused of corruption or using his power to gain money. He doesn't even have a coin in his pocket. Now show me a coin, they show him a coin. It's a Roman denarius. It's got a stamp image of Caesar on there, and the inscription is something about whatever Roman power, or I don't know what it said, something about Hail Caesar or something. And he says, "Well, whose image is this? Whose inscription is this?" And they say, "Caesar's." Okay, Caesar's the one who is in charge of the money. He's the one who minted this coin. He's the one who has established the system. Caesar meaning the Roman government, not one person, but the government as a system. The government is doing this, so pay just honor to this earthly power. We pay to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. It's a legitimate level of human existence, the government. Even though governments are usually corrupt and incompetent, we still need them. And we have to keep working to make governments better, and we have to work with them, not always against them, so that they will fulfill their role in society. We need governments. You know, if you want to see what happens when there's no government, go to Somalia or whatever. Some of these, what they call failed states, no government, no functioning government. Go to Haiti. Who's in charge? Armed gangs. So you think corrupt government is bad? No, corrupt government is really good by comparison to armed gangs. I'm not defending corrupt governments. I'm just saying that we have to have a government. We have to have Caesar. And Caesar has a right to impose taxes in order to take care of public needs. And we have to pay our taxes. But Jesus says it clearly. We pay to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. God is saying that. Pay your taxes. But that's not the only authority to whom we owe some obedience. And this is where Jesus is just brilliant. We pay to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and to God what belongs to God. What belongs to God? Everything belongs to God. We belong to God. Everything we have belongs to God. The government belongs to God. The country belongs to God. All the money belongs to God. Rich and poor all belong to God. As it goes, takes us back into the Trinity again. Everything comes from this communion of love. Everything. If something doesn't come from God, it doesn't exist. So everything that we do and say, everything we own, everything we all the works, are all to be ordered to God. Now there are, you know, categories and subcontractors in the work of authority. So government authority, then there's civil, all kinds of levels of civil authority, police and army, and then there's in companies, there are, you know, bosses and managers. In families, there are parents and children, there are people in charge of neighborhoods, the communities. Yeah, there's all sorts of levels of authority, and we respect that. But all of them are under God. Everything belongs to God. When Jesus says this, it says they were utterly amazed at him. They were utterly amazed at him. And it is amazing. It's amazing. God is amazing. God is amazing. That was the whole point of Sunday's feast, the Trinity. He's amazing. He's mind-bogglingly amazing. Beautiful, powerful, huge, simple, glorious, mysterious, amazing. In every way. But that God has gotten involved in the petty day-to-day struggles of our life, that's amazing too. He's involved in the paying of taxes. He's involved in what we're doing today. So that's what I'm trying to, the only point I'm trying to make here is that in the glorious, powerful, beautiful, loving God is right here in our midst. In our marriage difficulties, family problems, neighborhood problems, in our government's efforts to provide public services, God is right here in it all. So let's put our trust in God.